Thank you. So I'm here today to talk about what I believe is a much more prevalent traffic safety problem than we generally think of it as and than it's reported to be, and that's drowsy driving. So first, I have no financial relationships to disclose. In this presentation, I'll be going through a very brief review of past studies on drowsy driving, and then I'll take a little bit of a closer look at some of the data that we have to work with, and I'll show you that when we're looking at drowsy driving, we have a problem with missing data, and we'll talk for a minute about how to address that, and then I'll show you what I did and what I found. So one of the most common sources of data that we analyze on motor vehicle crashes are the data that police collect when they investigate a crash and they file a report. And in the past, when researchers have looked at data from police reports, they found that about 1 to 4% of crashes involve a driver that was reported to have been drowsy. Now, a few more in-depth studies that have used some more sophisticated data or analytical methods than that have actually found substantially higher estimates of the proportion of drivers in crashes who are drowsy, anywhere from about 6% all the way up to the 20 to 30% range. For example, a study done a few years ago using in-vehicle cameras and methods along the lines of what Dr. Simons-Morton was just showing you found that 22% of crashes and near crashes in a sample of just over 100 drivers involved moderate to severe driver fatigue. So I was trying to make sense of that 1%, 22%, 33%. So I wanted to take a little bit of a closer look at the data that we have to work with here. So when we're just talking about fatal crashes, there's a great comprehensive database in the United States called the Fatality Analysis Reporting System, or FARS, that the US DOT compiles. And that's made up of the data from the police reports from all motor vehicle crashes in the US in which a person is killed. And looking just at data from FARS, we see that 1.6% of all drivers in fatal crashes are coded as drowsy. And looking up to the crash level, we see that 2.9% of fatal crashes involve a driver coded as drowsy. And that's all fine. But the problem is that in FARS, there's no way to distinguish between a driver who is known to have been wide awake, alert, and attentive, and a driver whose level of attention or drowsiness was unknown. But fortunately, there's another database we can look at that does make that distinction. And that's the National Automotive Sampling System Crashworthiness Data System. I'm going to call that NASCDS throughout the presentation. And that's also a database of the US DOT. And it's a representative sample of about 5,000 crashes a year in which a car, a light truck, that's a pickup truck, a van, or an SUV is towed away from the scene. And in NASCDS, the investigators who compile the data, they look at the police report, but they also interview the drivers involved when they can. And they base their assessment of driver drowsiness not only on the police report, but also on what they learn in those interviews. And looking at the data in CDS, we find that 2.2% of drivers are coded as drowsy, 52.9% are not. And most importantly, when the investigators in NASCDS can't make a determination, the data reflect that, and we see that 44.9% of drivers in the crashes in the NASCDS sample are coded as unknown if drowsy. So that's an interesting problem. We want to know how many crashes involve a drowsy driver, but for 45% of the drivers in crashes, we don't know whether they're drowsy or not. So I wanted to see what can we do about that. And the studies I cited on my first slide, their basic approach, although they wouldn't characterize it this way, was to assume that if we don't know whether the driver was drowsy or not, he must not have been. So that's what most other studies have done. It wouldn't be any more arbitrary to say, if we don't know, we'll just assume they were drowsy. That's obviously inappropriate. That's not what I'm about to do. But it wouldn't be any more arbitrary. So Another way to do it would be to just look at the percent of drivers whose drowsiness status is known and assume that your unknowns are distributed more or less the same way. And a little more sophisticated than that, you could stratify your sample first. Say you think drowsiness might be more prevalent at night than during the day, so you could look at crashes at night and during the day separately, distribute your unknowns like your knowns at night and during the day. Or if we're already acknowledging that we can actually learn something from the cases where drowsiness is unknown, we could just fit a regression model and try to predict the values of the unknown data. And that's probably the best idea so far, but the problem with that is then our predicted values look just like our observed data, and we need to account for the uncertainty that we introduced by estimating. So a way we can do that is to predict not just once, but build several models and predict a whole bunch of times and look at how much those estimates vary. And in a nutshell, that's what multiple imputation does. So for a 60-second overview of multiple imputation, basically you specify a model of the relationship between the variable you want to impute and all of the other variables you have in your data, and you use that model to replace each of your missing values with a random draw from its posterior predictive distribution. Sorry, I'm on the wrong slide there. And so you replace each missing value with a random draw from the posterior predictive distribution. And that's just a fancy way to say the distribution of the variable you care about, the one you're imputing, conditional on the rest of your data. And when you've done that for all of your missing values and you create a data set with all the missing values filled in, that's called an imputed data set, and that's a single imputation. So you can repeat that multiple times, say 5 or 10 times, and create multiple imputed data sets. And that's all multiple imputation is. So to analyze multiple imputed data, you just analyze each of your data sets separately the same way you would with any other database, and you can compute your means or your regression coefficients, or in my case, the proportion of drivers who are drowsy, and then your final estimate is just the average of the estimates that you get when you analyze each of your imputed data sets. And then To get your variance and your confidence intervals, there's a special way to do that. I'm not going to go through all the math here, but it's called Rubin's rules, and it's just a special way to calculate variance when you're dealing with imputed data. So in this study, again, I looked at NASCDS data for 10 years from 1999 to 2008. That gave me 80,000 drivers to work with. They were involved in over 47,000 crashes. The outcome variable I was looking at it characterizes the driver's attention. So in CDS, a driver can be characterized as attentive or looked but did not see. That means they say they were paying attention but they failed to notice something important. Or they can be coded as distracted. The database actually has several different codes for specific distractions. Or they can be coded as fatigued, sleepy, or asleep. I'm just going to call it drowsy. So before we start imputing, just to see what we're working with here, again, for in all of the drivers in these crashes, drowsiness was unknown for about 45% of them. Just looking at serious crashes, when I say serious crash, I'm talking about a crash in which a person was admitted to the hospital or killed, we see it's about the same. And then just looking at fatal crashes, we see that drowsiness was unknown for almost 3 out of 4 drivers in the fatal crashes in our sample. So how did I go about imputing driver drowsiness? I won't read you all the variables that I used. You can read them while I'm talking. But basically what you want to do is to specify your imputation model. You need to include all of the variables that help you predict the one that you're trying to impute. And you also need to include any variables that are related to the reason why that one was missing in the first place. And you need to include any variables that you want to use in your analysis later. and you need to use any, you need to include any other variables that you need for other substantive reasons, like in this case, NASCDS is a stratified sample, so I included indicators for the strata and I included the sampling weights. And something I noticed in the data is drowsiness was almost always missing for drivers who were killed. And the few times that it wasn't missing, I honestly didn't believe it. Because, well, the driver obviously couldn't have been interviewed, and a lot of these were single vehicle crashes where the only person involved was the driver. So I don't know how they could have ascertained that the driver was sleepy or not sleepy. So I deleted all of those, treated them as unknown, and imputed them. And injury severity was one of the variables in my model, so I just created 100% missing data for one level of injury severity. So to deal with that, I just combined drivers who were hospitalized and drivers who were killed and imputed drowsiness together for everybody in that category. So there's a couple of basic kinds of algorithms you can use for multiple imputation. The one I happen to use is called chained equations. I did this in Stata software. And again, I included the NASCDS weights in my imputation and in my analysis. So in theory, the results that I present should be nationally representative. And I created 10 imputed data sets. So as I just showed you, I was imputing a whole lot of data here. So I wanted to make sure my model was producing reasonable results. So basically I used what I'd characterize as a modified version of a tenfold cross-validation. And what I mean is I just took all the drivers for whom drowsiness was not missing, divided all them into 10 random subsets, took one of the subsets, replaced all of the values of drowsiness with missing values, imputed those from the data from the other 9, and then just went through and did that for all of my data. So then I had actual and imputed values of drowsiness for all of my drivers. And when I did that, I found that the imputation model was predicting drowsiness very well for all drivers overall. The proportion of drivers who were drowsy agreed to one decimal place. For all drivers in serious crashes, it was only off by 0.1%. For fatal crashes, it wasn't quite as good, but it was still comfortably within 0.01%. So basically that satisfied me that my model was producing plausible results. So the results now. So remember that in the original data, 2.2% of all of the drivers were coded as drowsy, but 45% were unknown. In the imputed data, I estimate that 4% of all of these drivers were drowsy. And the number in parentheses below that is just the 95% confidence interval. When we look at the crash level, 3.9% of all the crashes in NASCDS involve at least one driver originally coded as drowsy. And then bringing in the imputed data, I estimate that about 7% of these crashes in total involved a drowsy driver. And on to serious crashes in which somebody was admitted to the hospital or killed. In the original data, we see that 7.2% of these crashes involved a driver that was coded as drowsy. And then, based on the results of the imputation, I estimate that 13.4% of all of these crashes likely involved a drowsy driver. And now, just looking at fatal crashes, we see that in the original data, only 3.6% involved a driver coded as drowsy. But remember, nearly 3 out of 4 of the drivers in those crashes were coded as unknown, not as not drowsy. So looking at the imputed data now, I estimate that 16.5% of fatal crashes, or about 1 in 6, involved a drowsy driver. And there's a few things you need to keep in mind now when you're considering the results of my study. Imputation can't fix everything. So when you have missing values in some data that you want to draw valid inferences from, imputation's great for that. But if your data are biased, imputation can't help you there. So, for example, if drivers who were involved in crashes and were drowsy didn't want to admit that, or perhaps they weren't even aware that they were drowsy, or they didn't remember, then some of these cases likely would be misclassified in the original data. Or if, say, you had a non-drowsy driver who caused a crash and didn't want to admit that he was, say, text messaging or talking on the cell phone, so he said he fell asleep instead. If you have that kind of bias in your data, imputation won't help you there. And imputation can also be biased if the data aren't missing at random. And what I mean by that is if drivers who were killed or drivers in single vehicle crashes, if they were more likely to be drowsy and more likely to have drowsiness missing, that's actually okay as long as my model accounts for that. Where the bias can come in is if drowsy drivers were more likely or less likely to have their data missing even after accounting for everything in my model. And finally, I estimated the percent of crashes that involved a drowsy driver, and the way the data is coded in NASCDS, it's neither stated nor implied that drowsiness was necessarily the cause of these crashes. So, in conclusion, a couple of things. First, on data, it's important to code your data in a way that lets you know what you know and lets you know what you don't know. Missing data obviously isn't good, but as long as you can recognize that you have it, you can work with it. If you can't even determine whether or not you have missing data, then that's a problem. And that's why survey methodologists don't like to use questions that tell respondents, check all that apply. Because when you do that, missing data looks exactly like a valid response of does not apply. That's why I wanted to use FARS to do this study in the first place, but I couldn't because that distinction isn't there. And on drowsy driving, I believe the vast majority of studies have underestimated the contribution of drowsiness to motor vehicle crashes pretty significantly. For example, in a fact sheet that was just published this year, the USDOT reports that 1.4% of all crashes and 2.5% of fatal crashes involve a drowsy driver. Now, based on some of the other studies, like the one I mentioned at the beginning, using methodology sort of like Dr. Simons Morton's, and based on our understanding of the limitations of data that comes straight off police reports, and now based on this study, I believe the prevalence of drowsy driving and motor vehicle crashes is quite a bit higher. If we have any time, I'd be happy to take a couple of questions.
We have about 5 minutes for questions. Well, I had a question for you. We do imputation in Utah for our crash data as well. We've never really looked at this data version, but we use something called IBEware in SAS.
Okay.
Have you looked into that? I was wondering if you know benefits.
I haven't used IBEware, but as I mentioned at the beginning, there's a couple of basic kinds of algorithms. One is based on chained equations. The other is based on the multivariate normal model, and I'm not sure which IBEware is.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a multivariate normal. But Maybe not,
yeah,
actually.
When you're working with categorical data or binary data, then that clearly isn't multivariate normal.
Mm-hmm.
Some studies have suggested it's more or less okay anyway. Other people like to use chained equations. I use chained equations.
Right, okay. Did you run into any collinearity issues when you're building your model with imputation? Does data look into that?
Well, it's actually, with multiple imputation, that's not exactly it's not a major concern in the sense that the individual parameter estimates aren't themselves of interest. You basically want to throw in everything but the kitchen sink and then come back for the kitchen sink. And if you have multicollinearity or any sort of issues like that, it can make your estimates slightly less efficient, but they'll still be valid. And it's actually a bigger problem if later you want to analyze your data in relation to, say, I didn't put driver age in my model because it wasn't significant, but then I'll necessarily be biasing my estimates toward zero if I want to look at
at drowsiness and related to, say, driver age.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.